joining myself and the two guys from MUFON, Alejandro and James, is Angela Joyner, who a year ago was a reporter for a nice little newspaper called the Empire Tribune in a town called Stephenville. And all of a sudden, something literally, it just kind of falls out of the sky and into her lap and changed her life forever. Angela, you there? James is here. James, I guess we're having trouble getting Angela right now. She's going to join us in a second. But you've had a lot of contact with her. You have seen what it's done to her life, and I imagine you've had some of the same kind of things in dealing with this topic, how it's changed you, right? Is James here? Okay. Is Alejandro here?
George, can you hear me? This is
Yes.
James.
James, how you doing? I can hear you now.
Okay. Yeah, I heard your question. I think that this is it's an addiction. Once you get bitten by the UFO bug, the way we've been bitten, I mean you're basically it becomes your life. It becomes this obsession, this passion of trying to find out, what the truth is, and you really dedicate yourself to it. I think that's what's happened to me, and I'm sure that's what's happened to Angela. And by the way, George, you are on the top 100 men in blacklist.
All right. All right. Am I correct in saying that you did not, MUFON did not know about the Stephenville sightings until Angela contacted you, right?
Well, we had been receiving reports on our website. We didn't know the level of activity down there, but once Angela did contact us and talk to Alejandro about, hey, this is unprecedented what we're down here, that's when we really knew we had to jump on it.
Are we, is Angela there? Do we know yet? Okay, we're still working on that. So tell me the state of the evidence in terms of the Stephenville case, how you would evaluate it now, James, where things stand.
Well, I think probably the best evidence we have is from surrounding the sightings. I think it was around January 8th, which we actually have radar data for. That's probably the best evidence we have. We know there's a lot of anecdotal testimony, a lot of witnesses that have come forward. We don't know how much of that was related to the first series of events and how much was media induced. But we are very confident in the radar analysis that we did, that Robert Powell, our director of research, and Glenn Schultz, our radar consultant, did, that shows this unknown exactly where the primary witnesses place it. But I also think it's very significant the second level of, or the second part of the flap that happened in October. We sent one of our STAR team members down there to get evidence right away, and that was, I think, even a bigger flap than what happened in January. There was just many more people that had come forward, and we're seeing all these strange lights down there and all this strange activity.
I want to ask you about videos from the Stephenville area in just a couple of minutes, but I'm told that Angela is now there. Angela, you with us?
Yes, I'm here, George.
Hey, glad to talk to you again. Now, am I correct in saying that a year ago, I mean, you had no idea that your life was about to change and change dramatically?
That's exactly right. I had no interest in UFOs at all 1 year ago.
So you started getting these reports from your readers, right?
Exactly. The first person that called me was Steve Allen. He called me on January the 9th after he had seen something with some friends in Selden on January the 8th, the evening of January the 8th. And the first story I wrote printed on January the 10th.
And can you hear me? And were you did you have any trouble in getting the stories printed when you first started working on it? I tell you what, we're having some technical difficulties, folks. Angela and James, hang on. We're going to take a short break and sort this out. And when we come back, we'll get into the Stephenville sighting story here on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks. Welcome back to Coast AM. Apologize to everyone for our technical difficulties. I think we've got it worked out. I think the problem is maybe I'm just being a little ambitious here and trying to have so many people on the phone at the same time. So Alejandro Rojas and James Carrion are going to be standing by and rejoining us in a little bit. But for the time being, we're talking to Angela Joyner. She's the newspaper reporter who first got her hooks into the UFO topic with the Stephenville sightings a year ago. Now, that got you fired, didn't it, Angela?
Well, I don't know if you would call it fire, George. It caused me some difficulties. I just had a problem about abandoning those witnesses. I was told to ignore emails and phone calls from anything regarding UFOs, and I just didn't feel like I could do that. I did try to direct those things to after hours, and I forwarded emails to my home computer, but evidently that wasn't the right thing to do either. I really tried to honor the newspaper director's wishes, but it was a very uncomfortable position for me, and I ended up giving my notice. And then 1 week into that notice, I had given 2 weeks' notice. I came to work at my regular time about 9 o'clock in the morning and had no computer and no Rolex. So, you know, was asked to leave, pack up my things, and, you know, that's basically what happened.
Was this more of a, and I'm asking you to get a guess here, obviously, was this is some sort of a conspiracy cover-up imposed from above, or more of the kind of thing where your editors were, they didn't want you to waste your time on something as crazy as UFOs, or they were embarrassed by all the attention that that little town was getting on a subject like this?
Well, I knew that there were some city council members that had protested that said, we don't want Stephenville to become the next Roswell. I knew some things like that. I think really it was not a conspiracy type decision. I think it was basically the editor and publisher decided it was just time to move on.
Business,
and,
huh?
Yeah, they felt like the readers weren't appreciative of the stories. And I had a little bit of a problem with that since we had record sellout days in the history of that little newspaper. And it was just a small newspaper. It did drain the resources of a small newspaper. There, I was supposed to have two front page stories every day, and I did an education page and the local university page for weekends. So I was lucky, really, George, just to get one front page story done when this thing went international. So that meant a lot of people were picking up my slack, and I think they got tired. I think, it was too much for a little newspaper.
You mentioned how there was some concern about Stephenville becoming the next Roswell. Has it? Is there residual effect? Are there UFO-related businesses popping up? That people still come to town looking for things in the sky?
No, I don't think so. You know, for a while, there were a lot of T-shirt sales and that sort of thing. But I think mostly it's died down now. I don't really feel that Stephenville is going to become the next Roswell. Now, in the UFO community, I think it's very well known, and I think it's a strong sighting. But as far as locally, I think most people, have kind of shrugged it off.
You were going to work on a book, as I recall the last time we talked. Is that still alive?
Well, I had thought about a book, but no, that's not really the case now. I'm still grappling with that, as a matter of fact, George.
And do you know, it seems to me I've heard reports that there have been other sightings of recent vintage. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, I do.
Can you tell me about it?
October the 23rd, there was just tons of I got phone calls, I got people calling me, telling me, what they had seen or what their friend had seen. It was fairly incredible. Even my own brother called me that night. And also on November the 18th, I wrote a story about a former military person that saw something that was unexplainable. And he, he didn't really know what it was that he saw, but he didn't think it was anything that was ours, meaning military. He thought the technology was much too great for that. So it's been an interesting year. It's been a whirlwind year for me.
I'll bet. Hey, I think our MUFON guys are with us. James and Alejandro, you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me, George?
Yes, I can hear you. Tell me this. Are you boots on the ground kind of a thing, looking at these other sightings that Angela just mentioned?
Yes. We did send a STAR team, like James had mentioned earlier, for the October sighting. And we did do our routine of sending our FAA requests and everything. So we're still waiting to get information back on that. We did talk to some witnesses. Unfortunately, we didn't have a lot of tangible things to go with this time. We didn't get a copy of any video to look at. So we had some great witness testimony. So we're still putting things together. Just like last time, the media got a little frustrated because it took us 6 months or so to come up with our radar report. So it's taking us a while to go through all of that information. And I wanted to say hi, Angela.
Hey, Angela, help me figure this out. I'll ask you first and then the other guys. What was this? You know, we often hear in the UFO field, well, why don't they land on the White House lawn? It sure looks like these things were headed for the Crawford Ranch, which maybe they weren't going to land on the lawn. I don't even think it has a lawn. But what do you think this was ultimately?
Well, the January the 8th sighting with the work that Robert Powell and Glenn Schultz did definitely shows there was an unknown headed directly towards Crawford Ranch at 8 o'clock. You know, it was an unknown. We had F-16s everywhere, and they paid no attention to this thing. And, you know, the only thing that I can surmise is they knew what it was. Why, you know, otherwise, why wouldn't they send something after it? Because as far as the Bush Ranch is concerned, you know, there's a no-flight zone when he's there, and it's tighter, and then there's a no-flight zone when he's not there. And but nothing happened. This thing was flying directly towards Crawford. And nothing happened, even though we had 10 F-16s that the Air Force readily admits were in the air. So why don't they look at that thing? Why aren't they going after it? It's very, it's just very confusing to me.
Hey, James Carrion of MUFON, same kind of a question. Was this some sort of a grand gesture on the part of whoever was flying this craft?
You know, I think I would actually tend to agree with Angela, which is I think they knew what it was. It very well may be some new exotic aircraft that we have up there that they were flying around and testing, and this was part of a test. You know, it could be that they were testing it out and they threw the F-16s up in the air to have plausible deniability of what people were seeing. Or it could be that, you know, the F-16s were part of the exercise to pursue this or to play with it up in the air. I don't know. I don't know what this thing was, but I tend to agree with Angela that the fact they left it alone means that I think they know what it is.
Alejandro Rojas, I could make another argument to you that, yeah, they may have left it alone. It could be that it was ours. It could also be that there isn't a darn thing they could do about it, that it's somebody else's and there's nothing they could do about it.
That's completely true. It could be, you know, there's a lot of sightings that I'm sure they know it's there, but they're not flying around with jets. Is that their policy? There was an AWACS craft in the area as well, which is standard protocol when they're doing exercises. That this AWACS craft, this radar jet that flies much higher than these other jets, was in the area also. So they had a lot of observation going on in the area. Maybe that's their protocol. We don't even know what their protocol is with these sort of events.
Angela, back to you. You know, it's had profound effects on your life, reporting these stories. Would you do it again, same way?
You know, I have thought about that. It has had a profound effect on my life. I'm a freelance writer now, which is not the same income. And as you know, George. A reporter doesn't make that much anyway. But, yeah, I think I would do it again. It's opened up a whole new avenue for me. I have met so many nice people and intelligent people. And I still get emails from all over the world, which I enjoy very much. So, you know, it's had its good points and it's had its bad points.
Well, Angela, our offer that we made back in, I think, February still stands. If you decide you want to write a book or do anything else on this, I hope you'll let us know, because we'd certainly like to help support you, because, we, you know, the world needs more courageous reporters who are willing to take this subject on. I have one other question. I'm in Stephenville for our two MUFON guys, James and Alejandro. You know, a lot of people come forward with videos from Stephenville and making outrageous claims, exaggerated claims. Are there any of those videos you think are legit that show something truly unidentified?
Well, I can tell you from the second flap that happened in October, we sent Richard Webb, one of our STAR team members, down there right away. And he found two witnesses. They were two sisters, I believe, that they observed something in the sky, and they both had their cell phone cameras out, and they both took video of it on their cell phones. And Richard saw the video footage firsthand, directly off the phones. And the way he described it is just incredibly dramatic footage of UFOs being chased by military jets, and then military jets being chased by UFOs. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to get a copy of the video, even though it was promised to him, and we're not sure where those videos are right now. But I think that would probably be some dramatic footage if we can get a hold of that.
Any other ones jump out for you, Alejandro?
Well, no, unfortunately, you know, and I really got it. This makes us unpopular, but that real famous video that came out from the first sighting, you know, a lot of us kind of held our breath and let the researchers look at that first, but if you go out, this is one difficult thing in this field that people need to know. If you go out and use your digital zoom on a star holding your camera, it's absolutely impossible for you to hold that camera still enough for that star not to jitter around in all kinds of different shapes. Maybe what they filmed wasn't that, but there's no way to conclude that it wasn't a star being filmed. And we do know that they were using, you know, the digital zoom, the high zoom, which already distorts the image. So especially in a situation like that, if you think a UFO is flying around and trying to give you a message from the way that it's flying around, well, you're going to need to put your camera on a tripod.
I just want to say, Angela, we're about to go to the break. We want to thank you for joining us. I appreciate your candor and your courage, and I hope you'll stay in touch with us if we can help you in any way.
And, thank you.
Thank you. And our two guys, James and Alejandro, are sticking around. The example they're using of Stephenville sort of shows that if you want to study UFOs, you can do it, whether you're an investigator or a scientist. And the chief scientist in this topic, the cop on the UFO beat for all these years, Stan Friedman, is our guest when we come back after this break. So stay with us for Coast to Coast AM. Few people in the world have been studying UFOs for as long as Stan Friedman. He is widely described as UFOs cop on the beat, sort of sorting out wheat from the chaff. And he just recently got himself embroiled in a controversy, which Stan is likely to do over the years, with an academic institution that objected, some of the members, I guess, faculty objected to the consideration of a UFO exhibit in a museum. I think it's in the state of Florida. And Stan has been going back and forth with these guys. When we come back, we're going to take a look at that. We'll also be rejoined by our MUFON guys to talk about UFOs 2008, the year in review. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. My guests, as we discuss 2008 UFOs, the year in review, James Carrion and Alejandro Rojas of MUFON. We're now joined by nuclear physicist Stan Friedman, one of my very favorite guests on this program. Stan, how you doing?
Well, it's 3:30 in the morning or so. I'm doing fine.
Well, I will tell you that, you know, looking back at the year, I mean, one of my very favorite books, one of the very best, Flying Saucers in Science, A Scientist Investigates the Mysteries of UFOs, that you came out with. You also came out with The Braxton County Monster in recent times, and the and just doing some excellent work. I could not help be drawn by this story about what happened in Florida, I guess. Can you bring us up to date how this started at the Mary Brogan Museum of Art and Science in Tallahassee and what kind of flack you took from some of the academics down there?
Well, you have to understand, that's the home of FSU, Florida State University. They not only have a fine football team, but they've got a fine physics department. And the museum brought me in because they were displaying the Roswell exhibit for several months. This was put together by some guys over in Texas. And, you know, stuff on the walls and big pictures and clippings and the whole business. And I was at a previous Florida museum in Fort Myers, Southwest Florida Museum of History. They had had the exhibit. They decided to bring me in to give a couple of lectures, sort of icing on the cake, if you will. And it was very well received. We had great crowds, and they sold a lot of tickets. You know, how else do you decide these things? Anyway, the Brogan Museum brought me in and decided to bring me in to speak twice. The real Roswell story and star travel, question mark, yes. Now, you think that would be the one of interest to physicists. But anyway, out of the blue, 4 days before I was due to speak, a letter appears in the Tallahassee Democrat, the local newspaper. That's the capital of Florida. I mean, this is just, it's not a huge city, but it's not a tiny town either, in which a professor of physics, one Paul Cottle, whom I don't know, I did check, he is also a member of the American Physical Society, as I am, writes a letter in which he complains about their bringing in a well-known charlatan, me,
wow.
And a pseudoscientist, and you know how terrible it is that they did that. Now, somebody sent me a copy of the article, and I immediately emailed him because I went over to their university website. No response from him, of course. The next day, the head of the museum defends their choice, gives some of my background. And then the day after that, another professor of physics, who's head of the National Magnet Laboratory, which is a major world-class facility there. FSU is big. They got about 45,000 students, so we're not talking about a little podunk school. And he doesn't mention my name, but he does mention pseudoscientists and with regard to Roswell and UFOs. And, you know, is he? Are they going to be doing something on other far-out crazy things? And anyway, we had a good, an overflow crowd, actually, at the first lecture and a full house on the second lecture, and they bought a whole bunch of books, and there was some going back and forth, and I sent copies of these letters. I mean, I'm accustomed to taking on anybody, George, but an equal situation. I had a critic at a college in New York State who, at the end of my lecture, stands up and says, I've never had heard so much nonsense in one night in my life. Fortunately, I said, can you be a little more specific? And he rattled off a bunch of you said that, which I had to correct each time. He said that I said that Betty and Barney Hill were taken to Zeta Reticuli and back in 2 hours. And what I had said was they were on board the craft for 2 hours. They didn't go anywhere. I mean, you know, a little bit off in his comments. Anyway, went through a bunch of these. Somebody shouts out, how about taking some sensible questions? This guy leaves, and I say, who was that? I'll take your question. He was a professor of physics.
Oh.
So, I mean, that's the connection with this story. And I sent the letters to Billy Cox, who does a fine blog about UFOs. I sent copies to him. He contacted both of these guys. Well, I was just making a comment for the local community, says Paul Cottle. And he doesn't want to get involved in this. The second guy didn't respond. Then Billy did another column later, and the second guy responded a little bit. Bill tried to talk to him about Stephenville, which you believe. Billy keeps up on the UFO scene very well. And the guy didn't want to hear it. It's not my job to explain any sightings. You know, a totally irrational kind of response from both of these guys. And I'm still, what's the word I want, considering suing for defamation because it's libel per se. calling me a well-known charlatan is not cricket when I'm not. And I gathered together, hundreds of comments from satisfied university respondents who have heard me speak and so forth. And I have the 2 years to decide whether to sue or not. But it was one of those strange, totally unexpected things. Neither one came to my lectures, of course.
What is your inclination, though? I mean, for them to call you a charlatan, that sounds actionable.
It is actionable. I've talked to a couple of lawyers, and I'm sitting on it for a while because, and you'll love this, George. I mean, you're in Vegas. You know about these things. They made it clear, the university guy, the magnet guy, to the head of the museum, that they would work together with them on exhibits. But if any more trouble comes up, then that will stop that. I call that blackmail where I come from.
Jeez. Hey, our
so
MUFON.
I don't know.
Our MUFON guys, James and Alejandro. Now, do you deal with this kind of battle all the time, where there are still these kinds of things that happen, calling it a pseudoscience by people who know absolutely nothing about the topic? James?
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, Stan, Florida State's my alma mater. I'm an and I know the physics guys, so I know what you're talking about. But, yeah, I mean, I think, again, what we're dealing with are these folks out there that, you know, sometimes will run interesting public news articles in our local paper here, and inadvertently we'll get the newspaper reporter going to the local college here in Colorado State, and get somebody from their astronomy department to make a comment. And these folks know absolutely nothing about UFOs or the investigation of UFOs, but they always come out with these really debunking or offhanded remarks about we're the fringe crowd, the folks that wear the tinfoil hats, and you know, just basically shooting at the hip without knowing what the hell they're talking about.
Stan, yeah. Have you seen any indication that science in general, mainstream science, is any more willing to approach this topic, to treat it fairly, or is it getting worse?
Well, there are two separate sides to that, George. What I've seen is that when it comes to public pronouncements by these guys, they're as bad as they ever were. On the other hand, remember, I've only had 11 hecklers in over 700 lectures. So when it comes to getting down and dirty, checking out the facts, there's no problem. Because most people, as I point out in Flying Saucers and Science, there's a whole chapter in there in public opinion polls. And most people do accept UFO reality. These guys are scared of something. I don't know what. And I'll tell you, it's bad in another sphere, too, because even more recently than the Brogan stuff, a guy named Brian Dunning. Now, I don't know him. It's hard to find out anything about him. He writes a regular Skeptoid column, blog, and he did one on the Betty and Barney Hill case not very long ago and got everything wrong. And, I mean, I'm kind of an expert on that case. I've met the people. I've co-authored a book, Captures the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, with Kathleen Martin, Betty's niece. You know, first-hand investigation. And he heard me on some radio program. Somebody told him that I had said it was basically full of baloney. So he wrote another column and attacked me all over the place, but with as little concern with truth, attacking me as in attacking the case. For example, on the case, just so people know I'm not just blowing smoke here, he complained that Betty had dreams. She rewrote and rewrote and rewrote the dreams for 2 years. Barney must have heard it 100 times, and no surprise, and under hypnosis, she reported what was in the dreams. Now, she wrote down the dreams once. She told Barney about them once. He wasn't interested, stuck it in the drawer. And I've asked for, what's the source of that misinformation? Of course, no response. But he also complains that I have been writing once I left industry in 1970, all I've been doing is writing UFO books, including about Travis Walton, would you believe? And I didn't write my first book until 1992. I left industry in 1970, but I did do a lot of technical work since. But he has provided nothing to substantiate. And I pointed more than 20 actual false statements in his columns. And along with him, another guy who's jumped in because of his column, the skeptics unite. They sound like scared religious nuts, frankly. Phil Plait, who does bad astronomy. I agree with him on some of the stuff he says. Yes, I think we did go to the moon, etc. But he says UFOs aren't real because no astronomer has seen one, which is total hogwash,
yeah.
You know. And he won't listen. There are plenty of published sightings by astronomers, but you know, these guys, where are they coming off? They're running scared is all I can say. We've got them in retreat, George.
Hey, Stan, I asked this of James and Alejandro earlier. I want to ask you sort of a state of ufology question. In 2008, what stands out for you in terms of UFO events or research or whatever? And I ask it in this context. Are we any closer, do you think, in answering the big questions?
Well, one of the things that stands out, of course, is the Stephenville case. And I gather you've been talking about that. And I'm very impressed with the job that's been done by Angelica and the whole MUFON crowd down there. That's good news. I'm pleased at the fact that my book came out, that Legacy of Roswell came out by Jesse Marcel, Dr. Marcel. Witness to Roswell came out. Amazingly, all from the same publisher, New Page Books. Those are good signs. I don't know whether the government is doing anything at all in the background. We need more of the kind of work that went into the Stephenville investigation. I think we're in a holding pattern, frankly. I'm looking forward to next year because with a new administration, maybe there's a chance. And I'd like to start a campaign right here, George, for all those almost ready to die people who say were involved with Roswell or other events more than 50 years ago. You know, I've talked about the fact that in Shoot Them Down, Frank Ficino Jr.'s book, that orders were issued in 1952 to shoot down UFOs. There were more than 300 scrambles. And I've heard 7 stories of planes that didn't make it back. They got to be people who are on the ground who know about those instances. That was in 52, especially. So if we could get more of these people to come forward, you know, clean the slate. Let's talk about what's really been happening. We need the kind of courageous people that the reporters on Stephenville have shown courage in digging in. And I don't know what the latest number is. I told somebody more than 600 sighting reports came to MUFON in a recent month. Is that pretty good, James Carrion?
Oh, yeah, we're getting on average 600 cases plus.
Yeah, but there's nothing going on, people tell me.
Right.
You know, what can I say? So I'm an optimist, George. I've always been an optimist. I'm working on another book, though, that will have a chapter on UFOs. It's called It's Impossible, Isn't It? And this goes into all the stupid things said by smart people. You know, space travel is utter bilge. That was just before Sputnik. There's a whole bunch of these. I've been fascinated to dig into these things. And one will be on UFOs and looking at all the stupid things that smart people have said. My University of Chicago classmate, Carl Sagan, others, who are unwilling to dig into the data. Now, I'm not saying there's a plot out there. I think the only plot, or the biggest plot, is the nasty, noisy, negativist encouraging each other to speak out and say more stupid things. It's a very long list, incidentally. There won't be room in one chapter to cover all of the impossibilities pronounced about UFOs. And one of them, of course, is that governments can't keep secrets. And, you know, that is the silliest nonsense from the SETI people, especially, who, of course, have a vested interest. You know, it's funny, George. These people tell us we have no evidence, those UFO people. Where is there evidence that anybody out there is sending a signal? None. Not a bit. But that's okay, you know.
Right. You know,
go on.
You talked earlier about, you know, that you have optimism about the new administration, and I guess you're talking about disclosure and the possibility that disclosure might come, that this administration coming in might be more open to opening the files and having a free flow of information? I mean, is that what you think is going to happen? Because I have to tell you, I'm a little pessimistic about it.
Well, I'm not optimistic that, you know, as soon as we get a new administration, somebody's going to stand up and say, oh, by the way, we've been meaning to tell you about this. No, but I think there might be more serious discussion of how this could be handled. The world is in a pretty sorry state now, economically, politically. I don't know how many people got killed last night in the Gaza Strip, other places. The world's a mess. And it may be that some people will see this as a way to get the people of the world to stand back and say, hey, we're all earthlings, aren't we? We do have something in common. Not to say the bad guys are coming, but to say it gives us a new perspective on where we fit in the scheme of things. So, you know, I'm not anticipating any great hurrah, hurrah, look what's happened. I just hope something happens. And I don't, incidentally, I want to make clear, I don't want highly technical information to be put out on the table. We live in a dangerous world. If we have figured out a way, say, to detect vehicles in the atmosphere different from radar, why should we put that out on the table? I can't see that. On the other hand, it would be nice if we began to recognize we're not the big shots in the neighborhood.
Stan, thanks for staying up late or getting up late to join us. Your book, Flying Saucers and Science, absolutely one of the three or four best books on the topic I read in the last year. And I can't imagine, James and Alejandro, what are we going to do when we're not going to have Stan Friedman around? I mean, he's a young whippersnapper and everything, but he can't keep going at this forever. And I can't imagine anybody filling those shoes.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that. Stan is an absolute treasure in ufology, so we're hoping he's going to stick around for a long time with us. And by the way, Stan, you're also on the top 100 men in blacklist.
Check out my website, guys. You'll find me.
I think Stan, it's an MK-12 possible on some website, too.
Excellent. So when does this It's Impossible, Isn't It, coming out?
Well, it probably won't be until the end of 2009, or at least the middle of the year. But Kathleen and Martin and I are both working on this. She's going to handle a bunch of medical stories. Some of those are pretty sad, frankly. How many people died because the impossible items made their pronouncements and kept new treatments and so forth from being used. And ufology isn't the only area where big shots are saying stupid things.
You can't keep going at this forever, or can you? I mean, does your wife ever say, hey, Stan, you got to slow down, stay home this weekend?
Well, both my parents lived to be 89, so I got 15 years to go, George, okay?
And do you think that you will be able to crack it, or do you think you already cracked it?
Well, I think I have a little idea of what's going on. There's more to be done. We need a new generation of seekers, people like John Greenwalt, et cetera. So I'm still an optimist, George.
Thanks
Happy
very
New
much.
Year.
Thank you, Stan. Thanks for joining us. And we're coming right back with more discussion of the disclosure topic with one of the primary moving forces behind that movement. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM.